Krishna, everyone. It's a great honor to be here in New Ramanreti, and I feel as if we've walked into the spiritual world. Of course we have, actually. But there's something uncanny about seeing all my, God brothers, God sisters I haven't seen for a long time, and then other effulgent personalities from various parts of the universe of Krishna consciousness. And Florida has been a great revelation to us. It's also a revelation of how widely, or at least I should say, how far seeds have spread for Krishna consciousness, various places around the world, since we've been traveling recently. So tonight, we can have a few minutes now for a conversation about Bhagavad Gita and the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. But first, I offer my respectful obeisances to Srila Prabhupada, founder Acharya of this organization, and to all the devotees who are present here who are listening online. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much for being here. So in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna talks about various energies. And in the seventh chapter of the Gita, he says that there's earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and ego. And he lists these as the material elements that are gross and subtle. And then he says that besides these, aparayam itastvanyam prakritim vidime param jiva bhutam mahabaho yayedam darite jagat. There is a superior energy, and that's the energy of the conscious living beings who are actually animating and sustaining the universe. The body is made of the elements that are material. You can inventory your own body and see that there's earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and ego. And at least after one leaves the body and the body's burned, you can see that there are some very recognizable material elements. In fact, when a physical body's burned, most of the water goes off, evaporates. As is mentioned in the Sri Shapanishad, Vayur Anilam Amritam Atedam Vashvantam Shariram Om Krato Smarakritam Smara Krato Smarakritam Smara. Let this temporary body be burnt to ashes, and let the air of life be merged with the totality of air. Now, my Lord, please remember all my sacrifices, and because you're the ultimate beneficiary, please remember all that I have done for you. Well, it's the beginning of the Sunday program, and I'm talking about burnt bodies already. It's a family show, I think. Nonetheless, it's when we're objective about it, and one can't quite help not being objective when one notices that when a soul leaves the body becomes inert. And then if you've ever seen that a body's been burned, or that after the body's been cremated, that there's a box of what looks like dirt. It's just material elements that you might find in your backyard. And the reality of what Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita becomes all more real. In fact, some people don't think about it ever until somebody dies and then the body's burnt. Ram Nam Satya Hai. At a funeral in India, there's this chant thinking about how actually it's all true. Actually, only the soul's eternal and our relationship with God's eternal, but hardly do I think of it during my lifetime. I could pass one whole day without considering the fact that I'm actually not my body. I'm a spiritual being. And if I can do one day, I can do a week, and if I can do a week, I can do a month. If I can do a month, a year, 10 years, a whole lifetime. And Therefore, Krishna is giving us the advantage of seeing through the eyes of wisdom to objectify the body and the mind, and to notice that we're the ones witnessing the body and the mind. We can look at it, we can ourselves objectify it, and also we can come to realize that we're actually a living being, a conscious living being. So what are we doing in this situation? Why are we in a body in the first place? And Krishna talks about that in the Bhagavad Gita also. He says it's by the force of our own consciousness that we accept a new material bodies. So there's something that may be not so noticeable, and that is that the body is constantly changing. Of course, when we see people at intervals, we see that, oh, you've grown. But actually, the body's changing constantly. In fact, in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, and philosophers throughout history have noted that, as an example, one philosopher, a Greek philosopher, said you can't step in the same river twice. So in a similar way, you can't step in the same, or you can't breathe in the same body twice. It's never the same. It's always changing. And then Krishna says, dehi no smin yata dehe, kumaran yavaranjara, tata dehantara praptir tiras tatra namuyati. That the body is constantly changing. And that when there's a final change, or we do come to a final change, and then we, the consciousness within the body, leaves the present body, and we go into another body. So which body will we go into in the next life? So Krishna says in the 8th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, that's a chapter called Attaining the Supreme, a yang vapi smaran bhavam tajayante kalevaram tam tam evaita konteya sadata bhava pavita. Whatever you're attaining now, whatever you're inclined to, what is your main preoccupation in life, the feeling that grips you? What is it that you're most attached to in your life? This is the consciousness that we form as we live our lives. And very specifically, our consciousness gets affected by our association. That's something Krishna mentions also in the Bhagavad Gita 13th chapter, where he says, Purusha prakriti stohi bhunte prakriti jan gunan karanam guna sangosya sarasad yoni janmasu. We are vulnerable to our association. Whomever we associate, whatever environments we associate with, we take on the qualities of the people we associate with and of the environment. And there's a composite I carry around with me of the impressions that I've gained, not just in this life, but in previous lives as well. And this compels me, when I leave this present body, I have to accept another material body. Someone told me what it was like to get arrested. Of course, I also know, but I don't like to admit it. Actually, I don't mind admitting it, but I don't want to get into war stories. But somebody was telling me about what it felt like to be arrested, and one feels quite helpless. So the hands go behind the back, and then there's a click, and you get your hands bound by a set of handcuffs, and then you're put into a car, a police car. And then when the car takes off, you have no choice of where you're going. You're apprehended, basically, and then you're taken away to face up to whatever the violation was. And so this is a similar experience at the time of death for those who have not reconciled the fact that I'm not the body and that there's a way in which I'm being pulled along to another body. And so when I come to the time of death, there's a sort of existential crisis that takes place again, because it happens over and over again. And therefore, at that time, when I leave the body, I'm obligated to go to a new situation. I basically obligate myself to that, is what Krishna is saying in the Bhagavad Gita, because of the way I've developed my consciousness during the duration of my life. So Krishna consciousness is a scientific process through which one can purify the consciousness. And the result of this is that when one is able to clarify and purify one's consciousness, one sees directly that I'm not the gross or subtle body. One realizes one's identity beyond the body, which is highly reasonable because that's who we really are. And the process of devotional service is effective at doing this. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, "Mam chayo vyabhicharinam bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samatityaitan ramabhuyaya kolpate." That if you perform the practices of devotional service, which I'll go into in a moment, then you'll rise above the three modalities that are also called gunas, that condition our consciousness, that obscure our vision of who we really are. And when we're able to act in our real role as spiritual beings, and our consciousness becomes clear, and we become attached to spiritual association, and we become most particularly attached to Krishna, who's the soul of our soul. Bhagavatam, Shukadeva Goswami says, Atmanam Akhilatmanam. Krishna is the soul of our soul. And when we become aware of him and attached to Krishna and his beauty and the fact that I'm a servant of Krishna, we rejoice in that, we're able to act in that role, then we're accommodated in a different way. That is, when we leave this body, we're given a spiritual accommodation so that we can continue our services. So, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna gives us this layout of what our life is, who we are, what the opportunities are, and gives us a free choice to decide whether we'll take it or not. And this is quite exciting, because as a human being, we're at a juncture where we have an opportunity to improve ourselves. In other species of life, unless there's intervention from someone that has higher intelligence, and I don't mean to insult animals at all, because animals are our friends and I love them, but they don't have as developed consciousness normally, not always, but normally, as human beings. And that's a big responsibility. Human beings, when I come to grips with the fact that actually I have some responsibility, I have to improve myself. It can be daunting, but it also can be quite exciting. What makes it exciting is if we have two things. And also, I should say, what makes it possible. One is knowledge, and the other is practice. Two things necessary: knowledge and practice. Pop quiz, what's necessary? Two things.
Knowledge and practice.
Yeah, knowledge and practice. If we have knowledge and practice, then we can improve ourselves. And of course, then we have to have the will to do it. Yesterday, we were in Tampa Bay, Florida, and we got the great opportunity to go out and meet some of the people from Tampa Bay, Florida. We means a group of those who are practicing bhakti yoga. We went out with the sole intention of sharing with people, the fine people of Tampa Bay, various gifts like books that have knowledge and a process through which one can improve oneself. And also we had spiritual food, prasadam, and some chanting. So we went to a populous area, and we were meeting people randomly, apparently. Just whomever was there, we would talk to and introduce them to the idea that there's some spiritual information that could help make them help improve their lives. Of course, I didn't put it like that exactly. because that sounds a little condescending to people walking along the street. Nonetheless, that's a whole other topic. I met a young man who was going inside some kind of shop, not a kind of shop I was interested in going in. Nonetheless, I stopped to talk to him, and his friends went in without him. And I showed him a Bhagavad Gita and told him that, you know, basically what I'm saying right now about the Bhagavad Gita. And I told him also that if he wanted to give something in return for it, that we didn't need the money at all, but that if he wanted to do something like that, then it would help him understand the book more, because it's an ancient process called dakshina. When you give something in return for spiritual knowledge, it qualifies you to appreciate it. And so he liked that idea, but he didn't have any money, and he proved it because he had some shorts on and he, you know, pulled the pockets out and there was only lint, really. And he seemed very sincere about proving that he didn't have money. So I said, how about your friends? Why don't you go ask your friends who are in the shop? And he said, okay, I can do that. And then he went in, and I told him to keep the book, go in, and I said, you know, come back out, and you can find us. Well, I didn't wait for him. I had a good feeling about it, but, you know, not everyone comes back, because you could decide to not come back if somebody said that, right? Nonetheless, I was busy talking to somebody else, and then he came back out, and he was looking for me, and he saw that I was talking to someone else. There were lots of other devotees there he could have talked to, but Nirkula, my wife, told him that, you know, we can take it for you, the donation that he brought back. He said, no, I want to give it to him, because he wanted to prove to me that he was good for it. Now, how touching is that? Because, you know, when somebody extends themselves, it's their free will. They decided, they came back. And there was this really heartfelt exchange that we had between the two of us. And I was thinking about free will. Everyone has this window of opportunity to decide to do something or not do something. And sometimes we get waylaid. We get in our own way. And it's hard to take up the knowledge and practice. In fact, there's a concept that we've been talking about, we meaning the host with whom we were staying over the last few days at Tampa Bay. We're having some japa sessions in the morning. It's really nice to get together in a circle and chant japa. If any of you are new, japa is kind of mantra meditation to repeat the mantra, the Hare Krishna mantra. And we had some discussion at intervals about the importance of chanting. And one of the phenomena that we talked about was what I like to call the Dhritarashtra syndrome. Let me explain. Dhritarashtra, one of the characters of the Mahabharata, was inclined towards his sons, who were actually evil. Duryodhan was an evil person and tried to usurp the throne of the Pandavas. And there was a war that was about to take place based on dharma, on justice. And Krishna wanted to stop the war if possible. He did everything he could. So he sent a representative that was Akrura to meet with Dhritarashtra and ask him what his thoughts were. Krishna basically wanted to assess the situation, because it all came down to Dhritarashtra's decision of whether he was going to fight or not. He was going to just go ahead with the travesty he was allowing his son to go ahead with, in fact, encouraging him by not stopping him. And so Akura straightforwardly mentioned that I'm here on a mission from Krishna. I wanted to find out what you're thinking. And Akura told him that this is an injustice. You're allowing it to happen, and you shouldn't do it. And you should give the Pandavas their due. And then Dhritarashtra said, I understand everything you're telling me. I understand that you're coming from Krishna with this request. And I know what's right, but I just can't do it. Ouch. Right? Yes or yes? Okay, so there's this sense maybe, there's knowledge and practice, but how can I do it? So there's another element that's really important, and it's association with those who already have decided. They've decided that I'm going to surrender to Krishna, or I'm going to take to the process very sincerely and do it. What are those people called? What? Devotees. Actually, it comes from the word devoto. Devotee has the word vote in it, which comes from the word vrat in Sanskrit. A vrat and a vow and a devotee. Devoto means somebody who makes a vow and keeps it. That's what a devotee is. And so when we get association with devotees and we have knowledge and practice and we're able to stay in the practice, then gradually we can become clear in consciousness, and we can also become aware that Krishna is the soul of our soul, and we can rise above the conditioning of the three modes of material nature. And then when we leave the physical body, we will not be bewildered. Dhiras tatanam muyati. Krishna says that you can remain steady and see what's actually happening and not be bewildered by it. He mentions that in the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita also, that those who have studied the science of Krishna consciousness, those who have practiced it, they're not bewildered when they leave this world. So we have this opportunity, and this is a bona fide science. Anyone can take to it. One of the processes is chanting the Hare Krishna. It's a mantra. Sound, as it turns out, is one of the most influential aspects or elements in our lives. And whatever kind of sound we expose ourselves to will accumulate in our consciousness. And so the most pure sound is the sound of a Hare Krishna mantra. And it goes like this. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Krishna Krishna. Hare Hare. Hare Rama. Hare Rama. Hare Rama. Rama Rama. Hare Hare. Oh, thank you very much. And by chanting Hare Krishna, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that you can cleanse your consciousness. Chaito Darpana Marjana means the mirror of your mind can become cleansed. And then he lists many other benefits that come from the chanting. So it's a good idea to practice the chanting of Hare Krishna, both individually by repeating the name and counting how many times you do it. And it's also beneficial to chant as a group. And a couple other practices that are vital are to read Bhagavad Gita. The Prabhupada describes in the Srimad Bhagavatam that the Bhagavad Gita is the Vedic intelligence. How's that strike you? Pretty good? On a scale of 1 to 10, 10's the best thing you ever heard. 12? Okay. Yeah, so if you're getting Vedic intelligence and the kind of encouragement that Krishna gives in the Bhagavad Gita, that you can do this, little jiva. And then you chant and associate with devotees. Anyone can be successful in developing themselves in this lifetime. And even if you're working, you have obligations, which is the norm, you can still become fully Krishna conscious. In fact, there's good evidence that the juxtaposition of us practicing the various tenets of bhakti and at the same time working in the world, doing one's duty in the world, and having those two side by side, gives us sometimes even a clearer vision of what's most important to us, because we can compare the two. We can see them side by side. And we we can then exercise our free will. The most important aspect is when we decide that I really would like to do this and I'm going to dedicate myself to it. Then there are forces that are in our favor that will, that is, Krishna will help us from within the heart to make advancement in devotional service. He'll give us intelligence and also make arrangements so that we get everything we need to make advancement. Now, let's have some discussion. Means, if you heard anything so far that's stuck in your mind, that seems like it's helpful, that you can take away with you, then you can mention it. Or if there is a question that you think is in line with the kind of presentation that I just gave, that you think will make the conversation go a little deeper, then you can bring that up. And we have an extra mic, I'm positive. Right? Yeah.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you for coming and giving class. My question was, you mentioned there's the knowledge and then there's the practice and also, I'm blanking on the last one, apologies. But my question was how we can also add sharing the practice.
That's such a good point. Thank you. He said there's knowledge and practice, and can I talk something about the importance of sharing the knowledge and practice with others? In fact, we were just talking about that today as a sort of retrospective, because yesterday we had such an extraordinary experience going out into Tampa Bay. I mentioned already that we went out with the intention of sharing Krishna consciousness. We took books and we had prasadam in the form of cookies. And of course we always have the mantra we can share. And one thing I noticed was in sharing with others that the way, well, let me just say a little bit about the way I share Krishna consciousness with others. I like to meet people, just kind of go out into any area and a public area where there are people, preferably, and try to make a conscious interaction with the people that are there. And I find that living entities are very intelligent. They're part of Krishna. And they also have the power to reciprocate, which is amazing. And it's uncanny how easy it is actually to interact with other living beings if they want to interact. And so one of the strictures given in the Srimad Bhagavatam about how to share Krishna consciousness is to be selective. One should be selective. Ishvare taradineshu bhalisheshu tu satsucha prema maitri kripopeksha yakroti samadhyamaha. Havi Yogendra says, one should discriminate between those who are open to being shared with. Does that even make sense? Not a very good sentence, but we should look for those who are what I like to call ripe fruits. When you go to pick fruits on a tree, which ones do you pick first? Or do you pick it ever? It's ripe fruits. Because the other ones tend to not want to come off the vine. And the ripe fruits seem very much willing to come off. They almost come off in your hand. And you can tell the difference between ripe fruit and non-ripe fruit. So people are like that also. And one of the ways that I interact with people is just to say hello. And then notice their eyes. Because if you look at somebody's eyes, if you do that right now, like I'm looking at Omkar, and he's pretty blissful. And he's a ripe fruit. But if you look around and you just notice anybody ever, you know, people sometimes, if they don't want to talk to you, they just don't. And if you say hello to somebody and then they smile without showing their teeth, like, that's not very good. But you'll notice that some living entities are just sort of bursting out already, or at least budding. There's a bud coming. They're starting to to come out. Their consciousness is a little bit open, or they're just affable people. And so I look for those who come in that category by just saying hi. Hi. And then I notice where what state they're in, and then I'll tell them where I'm from and ask them where they're from. That's a reasonable question, isn't it? I like that question because there's no yes or no answer. Because generally people say no when strangers come up to them and ask, you know, hey, do you like me? No, I don't. Please go away. I ask where they're from. And also, Krishna, the most profound, what the sages thought was the most profound thing Krishna ever said, was at Kurukshetra during the eclipse, when everyone went there, including the Vrijabhasis. Yasyatma buddhi kunapetru datu ke swadhi kavatrajishu bhoma ejidi. Yatirta buddhi salilena karichijanishu abhigeshu saeva gokara. Krishna says this to all the sages that are assembled there at Kurukshetra, that people who think they're their body, and people who think their homeland is worshipable, and people who go to a holy place just to take a bath and not to hear Srimad Bhagavatam from the saints, these people are, they have lower intelligence. And the sages liked it a lot. But it's something we can notice, and if you appreciate where somebody's from, generally they appreciate you back. So then show them a book. I won't go into the whole thing right now, but what happens is, in sharing, is that that those who are ripe fruits remind me constantly of what it's like to appreciate Krishna consciousness for the first time. It's the most exhilarating of all experiences to be in the material world since a time immemorial. And then to come across Krishna consciousness, and then all the bells go off where you look and you say, hey, wait a minute, I'm going to do this. Anyone? Yes? And that experience, when we go out to share Krishna consciousness, vicariously we get to have that experience again and again through the eyes of those with whom we're sharing Krishna consciousness. We see it in them. And also, after I've shared a book and some prasadam, I ask people if they believe in the power of prayer. Of course, they can say yes or no, but I have a trick to that too, because if they say no, I say, great, we have a mantra for you. I'll give you a mantra instead. But then... but everyone... Now, I'll give you a couple examples, and I'll hand them a card with the Maha Mantra on it, and say, this is a prayer that's meant to wake up love for God in your heart. And then I'll say, all say it, and you can repeat, and then you'll know how to do it. Are you ready? And generally, they say yes, because it sort of catches them off guard a little bit, which is okay. That's all right. They weren't expecting to chant Hare Krishna, an esoteric spiritual mantra on it. In front of a discount clothing store. And so they'll say, Hare Krishna, and they'll say, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Now, when people who are saying it, it's probably the first time they've ever heard it. I have videos from yesterday of people saying it. In fact, I posted one of them someplace. And it was just so sweet and raw that when I heard it, I was like, why can't I chant like that? That's what I'm thinking. And you know, we went to North Carolina a few years ago. I do remember it was hot. It was 108 degrees. And we were going door to door. We were taking the devotees around to do a what we call a monthly Sankirtan festival. They were so enthusiastic, such great devotees there. And we had little groups. I had a group of about 7 devotees with me. And we went to this one door, and a physically impaired person came out, and he had a professional guardian or therapist with him, obviously, to helping him, because he needed that. And he was extremely enthusiastic to receive the books we were showing and didn't want to let it go. And his caretaker, that's the name, caretaker, was totally against it and told him, no, you can't have it. But he resisted and he held on to it. He wouldn't let it go. And then she relented, but then I said, you know, the thing about a donation, because I always feel that if there's that exchange, that I don't want to deprive anybody of the opportunity of expressing their free will and saying, yes, I'd actually like to help, to give something in return. And so when I gave that opportunity, he was extremely enthusiastic again. And she was almost incensed. That, no, you can't. And the door closed, and there was some kind of a brouhaha going on behind the door. And finally, he came out victorious and gave a donation. So then, it's not over yet, goes on from here. So then, you know, I just told you that I asked people, you know, do you believe in power of prayer? And he said, he could barely speak because he had to strain to pronounce even one word. That's how physically impaired he was. And so when I asked him that, that was the pinnacle of his enthusiasm. He wanted to do that. And that was the pinnacle of the caretaker's resistance also. She was, no, no, no. And he stood up for himself. He kept the door open. She tried to close it. He held her off. And so I took the opportunity. That's my job. And I said, oh, please repeat after me. And I said, Hare Krishna. And he said, but not so easily. You know, it just flows from us. He had to strain with every sinew in his neck. I could see him straining to say the syllables. And it took at least a minute to get through the whole thing. Seven devotees standing with me, all watching. Finally, the door closes. I turn around. There are tears coming from the eyes of the devotees. I said, what just happened? And the devotees all said, I wish I had that much desire to chant Hare Krishna. I take it for granted. I fall asleep. I don't chant my rounds. They said, I'm ashamed. And this is what one gets from sharing Krishna consciousness with others. When we take the trouble to bring somebody by the hand into the Krishna consciousness movement and go through all of the work that it takes to raise one person in Krishna consciousness, then we first of all see everything we are doing, all the daily beautiful activities that we're doing through the eyes of that new person, and it's 180 degrees different from just doing it for ourselves. It augments every practice that we have in Krishna consciousness, and therefore the two things inextricably go together, just as much as rice and dal go together. Does anybody like dal?
Yes.
Does anybody like rice?
Yes.
Would you like just rice for the Sunday program today? Would you like just dal? How about rice and dal?
Yes.
You're hired. There's 42% more nutrition when you mix the two together, according to Jamuna's cookbook, and as far as I'm concerned, is Shastra. So there was a question over here. Somebody had their hand up? Oh, you were raising rice and dal? Yes, please. Hare Krishna. Here comes the mic in 7 seconds or less, or your money back from today's program.
Hare Krishna, and thank you both for coming. It's so nice to see you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Igualmente.
Oh, can you hear me better? Okay, it's interesting you were talking about sound. And just today, I heard Bhanu Swami, His Holiness Bhanu Swami, from Chowk Party. Just today, he gave a lecture on the power of sound. And he had a whole presentation, but the essence of it is that, we knew the yogas in India from the Vedic scriptures, we know the sound has form and the power of sound, but now scientists have studied it and they have had a whole about effect on the gross body, like telomeres on the chromosomes to then finally the most powerful was that the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra has a form like every sound has a form. So when you chant, that's what it's supposed to reveal, Krishna's form, because Krishna and the name and Krishna are non-different. So when you chant purely, then you can actually, it can reveal Krishna's form. So that was... Thank
you. That was beautiful. In fact, there's a verse from the first canto, fifth chapter of the Bhagavatam, in which Narada Muni says, Iti murtya vidanena mantra murtim amurtikam yajite yagya purusham sasam yag darshana puman. He says that, first of all, iti murtya vidanena, the word murti in Sanskrit means form and it also means difficulty. And the verse therefore means that if you want to see the Lord, amurtikam, which means without difficulty, then employ the sound of the mantra and you'll see the form of the Lord. And he asserts, does Narada, iti murti abhidanina, mantra murtim amurtikam yajite yagya purusham, that by this kind of worship, by repeating the name of the Lord, then yajite yagya purusham, you'll see the person directly. Sasam yag darshana puman, and the vision will be perfect. It will be complete. You'll see the complete person through the name of Krishna. And of course, we know in the Bhagavatam begins, first chapter, with the admonition, Appanna samsutin gauranya nama vivishogranam tatasadyo vimucheta yabibheti swayam bayam. There's no difference at all between Krishna and his name. They're identical. And so the sound vibration of, let's put it this way, the sound vibration that we keep in our lives, that we're surrounded by, we could call our soundscape. We each have a soundscape in our life. And it's according to that that our consciousness is formed. And when we're very deliberate about what kinds of sounds we take in to our ears, then... And we're careful to take in spiritual sounds and to not deliberately take in material sounds, then our consciousness will adjust accordingly. Interestingly, wow. Should I keep going or should we freak out? This is not a freak out situation? Okay. Yeah, we don't get rain in California anymore. Well, if everyone's okay, I have a couple more points. I'll try to make them very interesting. I know the other ones are... I was trying to underhand pitch, but I'll try to make some interesting points. Are you ready?
Yes.
Are you sure?
Yes.
All right. Okay, so in Minneapolis, Minnesota, there's a negative sound chamber. In fact, there in Minnesota, Havi Prabhu probably knows because it's a famous recording studio. Many recording artists from around the world go there to record their musical albums. And the people there, being expert at engineering sound, developed a negative sound chamber. This is not like that. Do you know sound is measured in decibels? Right? Let's ask an expert. Habib Prabhu? Decibel. So, in the sound chamber, there are negative decibels. That means you can't hear your footfall. You can't hear anything. It dies in the atmosphere. Now, the investigative journalists who have gone there to report on this negative sound chamber or soundless chamber have said that it's the loudest place on earth. In fact, they all said the same thing. It costs $80 to go inside. And most people can't last more than about 60 seconds. Because it's so alarming to go inside and hear how loud it is. Is this getting interesting? See? So they go inside. And the sound is so loud that they can't tolerate it, most people. Some have been stoic, and for the sake of journalism, they stayed in there about 20 minutes. But they said they started to panic because they heard so many sounds, auditory hallucinations. Well, actually, they're the sounds that are already recorded within our subtle minds. This is called the citta. Our subtle mind is very much like a digital cloud. And everywhere we go, we pick up sound. Not just in this life, but in previous lives as well. It's all stored within that digital cloud. And these are samskaras of a kind, and they become activated at various times, and we hear them. And actually, it's also called unstruck sound. It's sound that's recorded inwardly, and then it comes out. And there's also a natural spiritual vibration. You'll read in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, where Krishna is instructing Uddhava, and he says, in the various energy centers of up and down the spine, there are various sounds, particularly in the region of the heart, the chakra in the heart region, the sound vibration Om is present as unstruck sound. So sound is a part of our psyche. It's what's there constantly. And the kinds of material sounds that we hear compel us to, well, they actually agitate the mind. And this is something that Narada Muni brings up in his instructions to his disciple, Śrīla Vyāsadeva, because he didn't like that he didn't include very direct information about Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in his writings, including the Mahabharata. And he told him that anything you say that isn't about the Lord will agitate the mind the way the boat on the water, a boat on the water, is agitated by the wind when it has no resting place. So, okay, something practical. We can adjust our soundscape. And Yadubar Prabhu, when he makes a movie, he puts a lot of into the soundtrack. In fact, early movies, they were called silent movies. But actually, they weren't silent. Because even in the earliest days, there was always a pianist accompanying, or an organist accompanying the movie, because you can't just watch some images without sound to tell you what's going on. It informs us what's happening. And then in every cinematic presentation, back me up if you wish, there's a lot of consideration about the soundtrack, because it defines the period of the, you know, what era it is from, and what the mood of the movie is, and things like that. So all of the sound that we have in our life and that we've allowed to go in is determining the direction we go in our life. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's process, which is to take in pure spiritual sound, is helpful, to say the least. And finally, there's a way in which, in computer language, when you have code, it can be overwritten. And then the same thing can happen by this, the kinds of sound vibrations that we have within our subtle bodies. Engineers? Are you IT? Anyone? I need another expert witness. Prabhu? Overwriting code? Possible? Okay, thank you. You can overwrite it. You overwrite it, and the other code basically just falls apart. It just disintegrates after time, and you write in the new code. So the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra overwrites the aberrant sounds that we've taken in, and it redirects our redirects us to Pavarga, going back home, back to Godhead. Okay, we have a couple more minutes, so somebody ask me some outrageous question. Prabhu.
Such a wonderful class. I was thinking, in the beginning you were mentioning about two things, knowledge and practice. And you also talked about free will, choice, free choice we have. And then this Brahmachari Prabhu from Krishna House added one more. He said, what about sharing? So can I ask you to have two more adding?
Please.
Because in 1863, Bhagavad Gita, Krishna almost finished talking. He said, I gave you all the knowledge. Jata ichchasi tata guru, do as you like. So free will is manifested there. Krishna did not force. But then seeing Krishna's, Arjuna's indecisive mood, then, oh my God, I got so much information from the Hare Krishna, I mean Krishna himself. And what should I do? But Vaishnava Chakravarti Thakur says that Lord, compassion appeared. He said, you do just these five things. I'm just wording it out like this. Think of him, become his devotee, serve him, surrender to him, share what you learned from him. And that's complete the whole Bhagavad Gita to me.
Hari Bol.
Just to give that, and then 1868, the result of this fight, he said, idam ganam
bhaktim mahi param krittam amevashyasi asangshaya jayidam paramam guyam mad bhaktisi abhidashyati. And if one does these five things, share this, then he will get love for me and will come back to me without doubt. And Prabhupada glorified that verse by the next verse. And there will be no one right now better than that devotee who does five things, and or in future will be anybody more dear than that.
Wow. Haribo! Okay, 2 minutes. Prabhu.
Thank you so much, Maharaj. Now we're talking about sharing. I wanted to just ask you, how can we reconcile, you know, other people's, I mean, how can we carry other people's love for Krishna? That we is there, you know, like the right mango you talk about, but, you know, Krishna consciousness is so detailed, and, you know, the worship of the deities and the personalism and all that stuff. So how can we, or at least myself, give Krishna in a way that is palatable to people, but that it doesn't go so fast that probably, you know, they can get like a short circuit?
Yeah, in their good point, Prabhu. By the way, you have the best mic stands in the movement. Yay! All the other ones are broken. These are good. Way to go, Mukhya. Okay, let's just do a quick tutorial on the Krishna Consciousness Movement, since I only have a minute left. May I? Due to your excellent question, Prabhu. Okay, there's two parts to the Hare Krishna Movement. One is chant Hare Krishna. That's one. Right? Please say yes. Number two, when you get tired. Number two, teach others. Okay, what's number one? Do a quiz. Number two. Number one. Can you do a little more enthusiastically? Number one. Number two. Number one. Two. One. Two. 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 One. Two. One. So now we should be able to wake you up at 1 a.m. and say, what's the purpose of the Hare Krishna movement? And you say, and that's how simple it is. We don't have to make it complicated. Everything else good comes from that, those two things. And if you conceptualize it like that, then it's easy. So thank you very much, everyone, for dedicating your lives to the Krishna Consciousness Movement. The world needs all of us to help spread Krishna consciousness. Hare Krishna.